come to tempt your palate, and they make the rounds on the town in a maximum limousine. You found the right radio show for a couple of guys who are in the know about the best places to go in the local scene. Chef and the Fat Man. Why should you ever trust a cook that isn't portly? You found the right radio show for a couple of guys who are in the know about the best places to go in the local scene.
Yes, my friends, you have no idea what happens during the shameless commercial breaks or the conversations that partake. But I will tell you this, that when you come to Cutter Cigar Emporium, your portal to the world, the conversations will be fun, entertaining, certainly lively, and no matter how tired you are, or if you've had a rough day, you can come to Cutter Cigar Emporium, have a fine cigar, fine scotch, fine bourbon, a fine wine, and just kick back, relax, and join in the conversations that few cigar stores I've been in, and you've been in more than I have, Chef Eric. This is probably the most friendly and the most eclectic group of intelligent, fun, witty people as I've seen in any cigar store anywhere.
Absolutely. But, you know, the funny thing is that I've been noticing, you get my cigar out of my breading station.
You're such a snob.
What I've been noticing as I travel around going to different cigar stores, is that, you know, the culture of the cigar is one that is universal. I mean, I've gone to stores around the country that are very much like Cutter's, that feel very much like Cutter's. There's none others here in Atlanta, but there are in certain parts of the country, and I think it's great because it just, you know, that when you go to a lounge that's like Cutter's somewhere else, that you're going to have discussions with people, you're going to have, you know, interesting stuff to talk about.
Another good one, we did find a very good one up in Cornelius, North Carolina. That was a good crew. I mean, they were having conversations about watches in the 35 to 50 price range. I thought it was bucks. No, it was K's. And this one guy had over 180 watches in his collection.
Yeah.
And the cheapest watch he had in there was $5,000.
Yeah, and he was driving a Ferrari, by the way, so there you go.
Well, was that during the week? Yeah, on the weekends he drives his Bentley.
Yep.
Those are the kind of people you meet at a cigar shop. It's a lot of fun. And, yeah.
Then there's you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, his Bugatti's getting a little, he's getting a little tired of his Bugatti, so he's, Glenn's looking at, as we speak, he's on the motorcycle watch list for something else. But
actually, there's a very nice vintage Cadillac sitting outside that is a beautiful car right now.
Telling you, you just find out so many things. Now, Chef Eric, this smells wonderful. What have you got cooking next?
All right, so I set up a little breading station to do some Milanesa. So
who?
Milanesa.
Yeah.
Milanesa is traditional breaded veal from Argentina, and we're going to make little sandwiches with them. So I started with my coconut oil. It's got a little hot in there, so letting it cool off just a bit. We're going to drain off some of that existing
coconut
oil. Now,
would this be considered a Argentinian street food?
Definitely. Yeah, this is something you get on the street in the restaurants. I mean, you get it all over. It's sort of a national dish. And there used to be a carniceria in Los Angeles that was an Argentine market, okay? And it was about the size of Cutter's. It was, you know,
50,000 square feet?
Not quite. It's pretty small little place.
Give or take 49,000?
Yeah. pretty small little place, but very, very popular. So popular, as a matter of fact, that people would wait in line down the street for a block and a half to eat the milanesas and the empanadas and things like that. So it really had an amazing following. I went back to it, and it's called Tito's, and I went back to it several years later. They had moved across the street because they bought the entire block across the street and now created a huge supermarket, and they're subleasing properties, you know, to
sure.
to the storefronts to other people, And it's really become a little cultural center, basically. But they're still selling the same empanadas and the same milanesa there. So if you happen to be out on the West Coast, go down to El Monte and find Tito's. And it'll be a neat experience.
Well, I just got a text from a listener who wanted to know, Chef Eric, did Jeeves get upset with you every time you sent him to the store to get your milanesa?
I went to the store to get the milanesa with my mom. We used to take the bus, actually, to get there, if you must know. So there. How do you feel?
Please. Oh, there's another text. Why are you such a liar?
I'm not lying.
I'm just saying.
All right, so I don't want to crowd the pan too much, so I'm going to do two at a time. But when this breads, they should be nice and crunchy and crispy. They're breaded with flour first, then an egg that's been beaten, and then Italian breadcrumbs. All right, so that's the sequence.
Is the breadcrumbs, you know, a lot of people like to use panko. Breadcrumbs is the best for this.
It's regular Italian breadcrumbs. That's what you want to use. So, yeah, that's going to be the best choice for you. These cook almost immediately. I mean, they're very, very thin. This is a veal, usually for veal scallopini. When you go to the market, they'll usually have veal that's cut like this already. If not, the butcher can do it for you, and you just tell them you want it very, very thin. Some people pound it out, and I'd just rather get it cut like it is. All right, so let's see how we're doing. We want it to be nice golden brown.
Can you get like a triple-decker milanesa or a big milanesa or something like that, or do you just get it the same way pretty much everywhere?
So there are some places that use, like they do like Wiener Schnitzel. Mm-hmm. Right? Wiener Schnitzel is very much like milanesa, but they typically serve a big, you know, big piece that's been pounded out. This traditionally is kind of a 6 to 8 inch by 2 inch, 3 inch little strip. And that's perfect because we're going to put it in a sandwich. So it's the perfect size for it. All right. So there we go. Again, not wanting to overcook.
You know, now earlier in the show, Chef Eric, I mentioned the fact that next week we will be down in Mexico Beach competing, and we are going to be doing something that very classic New Orleans, Cajun. It's a contest where it's a gumbo cook-off, and a lot of competition, a lot of fierce competition. One of the things that's interesting about that is maybe sometime in the show, if you have time, if not, we'll wait till next week, but determining how much to put into a larger quantity, because you do a lot of catering.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get recipes that are really good, but then you have to figure out, well, how do I make it on a bigger scale? And it doesn't, many times it does not equate
to.
It
does not scale. Most recipes don't scale.
If you put this many ingredients for 5, you figure, well, I'll do 3 times ingredients for 15. Not necessarily the case.
Right. Well, that's why learning techniques are so important, rather than the recipe itself. If you learn the technique, you're less likely to make a mistake like that, because as you're seasoning, for example, you'll see that, okay, that's enough salt. I don't need the additional salt. I don't need necessarily all the same materials. Some things will scale. I mean, the protein obviously scales,
mm-hmm.
Some vegetables will scale pretty well, but you may have to cook it in batches. Things like grits and stuff like that don't scale like you think they're going to scale. So there's definitely, depending on the scale of what you're looking for, no pun intended, different requirements.
One of the things I found very interesting, especially with seafood gumbo, because if you use a lot of really fresh seafood, there is, the fresher the better, there is a lot of saline from the ocean that's in the fish or in the product that you're putting in there. Now, we're going to be using crab meat. We're going to be using fresh oysters with the liquor. We're going to be using, what else is it? We're going to be using some heavy, thick white fish. And all those things have a lot of salt in them. And I found the first time I made it, I got a roux recipe, and I used the salt. Then I added the seafood. And when I ate it, it was way too salty. And I couldn't understand why. It was the salt that came from the seafood. Now chefs have told me, down in New Orleans, they said what you need to do when you're cooking with a seafood gumbo is, the secret is, putting the seafood in last and just before you serve it to make it really right. And don't season it until a couple of minutes after you add the seafood. Do not add any salt, because the seafood will absolutely salt up a lot of your gumbo. So it's just a couple of tips.
And it really depends on what kind of seafood you're using as well.
More food, more fun, more information, I shall say, right here on Chef and a Fat Man Live from Cutter's Cigar Emporium. We'll be right back.